from a compete for championship standpoint, that's kind of why we're here. In the words of our assistant coach Andy Boyer, we didn't come here to net.
Sure.
Like we are here to make sure, because I think that's a teachable aspect of every program, is how do you go about competing at a high level? There is a lesson to be learned in learning how to win at a high level in a very respectful way. In our program, everybody is entitled to one thing, and that is the opportunity to uphold our standards. And when we talk about championship behaviors, basically, championship actually in the dictionary is defined as in defense of something. We've taken that a step further, and we are in defense of our standards.
Yes.
So when we talk about championship behaviors, it's not getting the trophies that are sitting on my desk. It is championing the standard that we are trying to hold ourselves to every day.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome back, or welcome to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. This is your home for certified audio gold and your podcast destination where you come to connect with some of the very best baseball minds in our game. This is a community of lifelong learners. If that describes you, you have absolutely clicked into the right podcast. There's some content that inside this show that's really going to help you out. We're connecting with a fantastic guest this week, and it's one that you're really going to enjoy joining in on the conversation. So thanks for checking in on us. Connect with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at ABCA1945. Also, feel free to reach out to me directly on Twitter at CoachSheets3 or by email Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Love to see the tweets going out. Love to get those emails, those messages, guys. We'd love to hear how these episodes hit you on the other end of the call. You know, what stuck out to you? What really challenged you? Share that stuff with us. Share that with your community. Share it with your followers. That way they know what you're into. Don't forget to subscribe, review, and share. Those are important to what we do here with the podcast. Subscribe to it on your phone, your computer, your tablet. That way every Tuesday this show shows up waiting for you on your time. Leave us a review on there. More folks can find us when you do that. 5-star ratings always help. And share. It's a terrific opportunity to make sure you're reaching out and investing in the people around you. You're seeing if they know what's going on here with this audio gold. You're making sure that they get an opportunity to listen to the same conversation you did, connect with these great guests, and improve themselves as baseball coaches and teachers. We appreciate your help on those fronts. Beyond fired up for this week's show, a fantastic guest, a guy that I absolutely admire and respect and love what he's building there at the University of Charleston there in West Virginia. We're talking with head coach Andrew Wright, a longtime and loyal ABCA member, and a guy that as he gets going on this show, guys, you're going to hear him talk about culture. That's going to continue to really umbrella this entire conversation. You check him out on social media. Culture Matters t-shirts. If you watch what he does, championship behaviors, it's interesting to watch how he has gone about taking over a program and in 3 short years, year 2, setting the program record for wins, year 3, winning a conference championship, taking them to their first NCAA national tournament, and setting a new record for wins in the program. It's awesome. More than that, you're going to hear Andrew talk about how he's mentoring his coaching staff, how he's created positions inside what he's been given in a Division II program, and he's created opportunities for more guys to get involved with college baseball, figure out what their niches are, what their strong suits are, and all in an effort to raise up the Golden Eagle program and move them towards their real goals, bringing a national championship back to Charleston. Great energy on the line as we talk through this, a guy you'll want to connect with after the show, and we're excited to bring this conversation to you. So let's jump right in. Pull up a bucket with us. We're going to hang out in the dugout and just chat a little bit. We've got University of Charleston head coach Andrew Wright. He's our guest on this week's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Get ready, coaches. This great show is coming at you right now. Coach Coaches, thanks for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. We are excited this week to bring you a spotlight on what I think is one of the best Division II coaches in the country. Very sharp young man, but what we're excited about is what we're going to get into and the content that'll come from this, revolving around how he goes about coaching his kids, running his program, championship culture, and a whole lot more. We're going to connect with the head coach, the University of Charleston there in Charleston, West Virginia, Andrew Wright. Coach Wright, thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Appreciate you having me, Chief.
We're excited to have you. And so we want to dive right into this because I know there's a lot we want to get to and discuss and really expand upon. But the first where we start our shows, I want to talk about your ABCA experience over the years, being part of our fraternity and what goes on here inside the association. Can you expand upon that for us?
Yeah, no doubt. When I started coaching, I guess back 2003-04, I was just kind of on the outside looking in. I went to my first convention in 2005 in Nashville and was just absolutely blown away. And to see the amount of that I have been able to be exposed to from 05 to going to Indianapolis this year is just, it's phenomenal. I think it, with the videos and things like that, we're able to open up a lot of conversations as it relates to baseball in our staff meetings and things like that. So it's not uncommon for us to pull up one of the speaker videos, watch it and just chat about it as a staff. So regardless of what is out there, whether it's, the convention, basically the paperwork you guys put out, it really opens up an opportunity for us to develop as a staff. And we're super excited about it.
That's so sweet. And we get that a lot from a number of our members that especially come back from convention and they listen to the clinics, they watch clinics, they take notes, then we release the videos. And then it's another big staff meeting of, hey, let's just review this, make sure we heard it the right way.
Yeah, no doubt. We were, Coach Hoyer and I were on our way back from Indianapolis and we were researching how in the heck are we going to get to Dallas to make sure we can get there for next year. So, just fired up about what the future of it brings. Cause it's awesome too, to take assistants and expose them to that opportunity and just create that extra element of development.
So. Yeah, that's great. Thank you for expanding upon that. Again, that's why we love connecting with guys like yourself. That's what this podcast is all about. And I want it for our listeners and for them to understand what you're bringing to the table and where some of this, you only gain perspective through experience. And so you've definitely got that. And I want them to understand where you're coming from. So you're talking about spending, 13 years going to your 14th year on the college level, going to be your fourth year as head coach, the Golden Eagles, and the run that you guys made this year. And I want you to expand upon that, but just talk about your career in baseball that lets them know where you're coming from.
Sure. Well, it was kind of I grew up, my father was a baseball coach, kind of at the prep level and things like that for a long time. So it was kind of one of the things I knew from watching his impact. It was something that I wanted to do. So the funny part was is that when I would go on, college visits and things like that, that would actually be one of my questions. Most people are asking about, how much playing time we're going to get, what kind of gear do we wear, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. I was asking, what are the opportunities for me to coach after it's all over with?
Wow.
So that was something that was really cool. And it actually parlayed into the opportunity that I had after I got done playing at Concord University, slid right into the student assistant role. And, then from there, once I graduated from Concord, went to West Virginia for 3 years and was on staff up there. And that really just kind of catapulted, my opportunity to create a network and kind of go from there. So from there, I was able to do a little bit of bird dogging with the Brewers, was able to get into private instruction when I had a gap between colleges and things like that. But, it all kind of circled back around to getting back to West Virginia and having the opportunity to lead the Concord University program, which I was there as the head coach for 5 years prior to coming here to Charleston. And like you said, going into year four. So
it's great. Now, what I love about this is, as a former UC alum and spending my first 2 years playing college baseball there, to watch you take this program over. And it was always a program I kept an eye on. I want to see how they were doing. I always check the stats. Just want to keep my finger on the pulse. And then to watch you come in, and the line that I'll never forget is, I feel like this program is a sleeping giant. I feel like we can win on a championship level. We can win on a national level. Sure. And that grabbed me by the shoulders. And certainly as we've and your friendship has flourished inside that, to watch what's going on there, I just want to give you the opportunity. Talk about the University of Charleston. Talk about the situation you have, the support you have within the athletic department, where you see this place going, and what makes it so special.
Sure. I think they got tired of me hearing hearing me say gold mine on my interview.
That's it.
Because it literally, I think it was like every fifth word out of my mouth was gold mine.
You believe it?
I do. I genuinely do. I think it was one of the things where when the position came open, it was, you know, you kind of look at it and you think about it a little bit. And then the more I dug into it, the more I realized, hey, that's pretty cool. That's, mm-hmm. that's an opportunity right there. This is an opportunity. That's an opportunity. So when you think about the fact that the academic structure that we have, which I'll sell here in a second, but the fact that you're in the state capital of, you know, of West Virginia, you've got the Capitol building right across the river. You've got, you know, everything that you need on campus to be very successful, even from a development standpoint, and then the opportunity to play at Power Park a little bit and do some things like mm-hmm. that. But I felt like if we could be successful with the program that we were running in a rural part of West Virginia, then certainly I felt like it just added more value to get to a place with a little bit more population, a little bit more opportunities and things like that. But then even as I began to dig deeper into the opportunities at Charleston, we actually have a different academic structure, and they go off of liberal learning outcomes and being able to basically satisfy all those before you graduate. And what it does is it creates opportunities for you to graduate early. Mm. It's a fast track degree. Mm-hmm. So you can actually fast track a business degree, and in as early as 3 years. We don't, you know, it's not necessary with what I'm about to talk about, but you can be out in 5 years with an MBA.
Gosh.
So when you talk about the structure, the way that we've now structured our program, which we have a development program in it as well, and we have a culture that dates back to my Concord days of redshirting about typically somewhere between, you know, 6 to 10 guys a year. Mm-hmm. When you can sell the idea of a 5-year plan that's going to be best for your physical development, your social development, your athletic development, it just seemed like a real opportunity to where you could catapult this program into, you know, into the national level, mm-hmm. if you will. So,
you know, I'm going to go a little off script here, but certainly as you got sure. into it year one, and you're working on changing culture, and you're working on getting your guys and uh-huh. developing your staff and really, you know, setting your feet in concrete. You know, year two, you think is a banner year, and it was certainly setting the new program record for yeah. wins and, you know, going yeah. to the conference championship game. But then year three, things really turn the corner, and, you know, you set a new program record for wins. You win the Mountain East Conference championship game, and those things that really fell into place. How rewarding is that for you? And I know, you know, we can't pour champagne on our heads just yet, because I know your goals yeah. aren't satisfied just yet of where you want to go. But in terms of seeing sure. that turn the corner in year three, how gratifying is that for you personally?
Incredibly gratifying, because it's one of those things where, you know, as soon as I walked in, our first meeting, first thing out of my mouth was, we're a championship program. We're going to start acting like it. And that was, you know, people thought I was crazy. We've won 16 games, and they're like, what is this? He's out of his mind. But, you know, we were able to stay on message and really preach kind of the idea of championship behaviors and, mm-hmm. and doing things that champions do, whether it's in the classroom, in the community, on the field, whatever it is. So I think as gratifying as it was, I think it was nice to step back and see that basically our approach just manifesting itself.
Mm.
You know, you get part of the way through the season, and once you're in a playoff run, it's just like, hey, man, whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
That's right.
And whatever happens is a result of everything that we have done up to this point. I don't think you just figure out how to win baseball games in May. It's a matter of, hey, we've been practicing this for a while. Now let's just go out and execute it at a higher level as far as it relates to winning games. So that was the rewarding part for me, and I'm standing here looking at our trophies we got this year. But it's one of those things that, yes, it's gratifying, but it is just it's a step on the ladder towards what we're actually trying to accomplish here.
Love that.
From a wins and losses standpoint.
Yes. So. Love that. Great viewpoint, great vantage point to sit from. And certainly you're definitely just now beginning the journey where you're going to take it. Now, I want to talk about championship culture, and I want to go down that road, because you just kind of opened that door and you talk about, you know, championship behaviors. And I think another cool thing that you've done is use social media to really highlight the cool things about UC. And certainly, as you sure. mentioned, I'm picturing it right now, right across the river, that Golden Dome is staring at you from, you know, the student center, from yeah. the weight room. But I want you to really just open up the pillars inside your program, and I will let you open those three up and really expand upon them. And I guess as you open those up and how you've been able to lay that foundation inside your own program, Maybe there's a first-year head coach, or maybe there's a young assistant right now listening that is getting ready to get a head coaching job in the next couple of years. What advice would you lend towards him as a guy who's led two different programs to success?
Sure. Well, I'll start with the pillars and kind of what we're built upon. I think if you look at it this way, you imagine that the most overriding factor about our programs, we want to create the most positive student athlete experience possible. Mm-hmm. So I haven't said a word about winning or anything like that. Winning is a byproduct of, you know, your people and your process, and we'll get to that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But underneath that, creating the most positive student-athlete experience possible are three parallel ideas, or we call them cornerstones. First one, graduate. Second, compete for championships. And the third, give back to the community. And basically, for under the graduate, I'm not talking, like, obviously you're coming to school, you aren't going to waste your money for 4 years and not graduate. That's not what I'm talking about. That's just the tip of the umbrella as it relates to that. So mm-hmm. within that cornerstone, we try to set individual expectations. You know, early in my coaching career, it was about, hey, we got to get team GPA of 3.0. Mm-hmm. That's great for the guy who's got a 2.5, right? But that's sending the wrong message to the guy who's got a 4.0. That's so right. What I noticed was when we dug a little bit deeper and created academic accountability plans, if you will, for each individual, our team GPA actually went up.
Sure.
So, you know, basically what we do with those guys, and I'm going to go very briefly into this because I know we got a lot more to get through, but what we do with that is we plot it out on the chart where essentially their high school GPA is on one side of the chart, whatever their goal GPA is on the other side of the chart, whether they got to get to graduate school or whatever it is, and then that creates an accountability line. Mm-hmm. So now we are able to associate their academic performance with something that actually matters.
Yeah.
Not just something that we can tweet about. Right. So guys are a heck of a lot more motivated to do their work when they know that it directly impacts their future.
That's right.
So that's one of the things where we don't do mandatory study hall. I know it sounds crazy. We have academic support. I'm not saying that, but basically what we have found is that when you associate why academic performance is so important to them and their future, they're more likely to go to class, get the work done, and do it at a high level. Mm. So with that, you know, from an academic standpoint, one of the things that we talk about is GPA is not necessarily going to get you a job, but it might be the tiebreaker that does help you get that job.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, our academic stuff in a nutshell. You know, we talk about it. I don't want to say that we harp on them about it. It's just an expectation. You know, if you don't go to class, you don't come to practice. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Different things like that. So just setting up some of those expectations, I guess. And then from a compete for championship standpoint, that's kind of why we're here. You know, in the words of our assistant coach, Andy Hoyer, we didn't come here to knit. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like we are here to make sure, because I think that's a teachable aspect of every program, is how do you go about competing at a high level?
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about being a nice guy. That's all well and good. But from the other side of it, there's a lesson to be learned in learning how to win at a high level in a very respectful way. So that's one of the things we do there. And we feel like our program structure and the staff that we have in place certainly puts us in a position to go out and compete at a high level, like I talked about. And then the last part is basically giving back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
With that, and I can actually go back to the press conference that I had when I was named the head coach at Concord, and I only had two pillars at that point. We were going to get rings and diplomas. That was kind of what we were going to do, right?
Yep.
But I'll touch on that in a little bit, too. I think the one part that's missing in a lot of programs is basically that third element, because it's very easy to live inside a bubble as a collegiate athlete.
Mm-hmm.
To say, I'm so important, or I'm so busy because I got to go to class so I can stay eligible and get a 3.0. My coach said I need to get 3.0 and I got to do this and I got to do that. But the part is, we want our guys to understand by the time that they're done what it means to live a life for other people. Mm-hmm. Because I think as you expose them to that, it creates excellent opportunities to bond as a team. Because when we do our 1,000-hour project, we mean 1,000 hours. Our program pledges 1,000 hours to the local community every year. That's 1,000 hours that our team is together,
mm-hmm.
and basically interacting that way. But also, the more that you practice those types of behaviors, the more likely they are to show up in the seventh inning or the ninth inning when your back's against the wall and you need your buddy to get a hit. you know, that sort of thing. And the whole idea of mudita that you so eloquently spoke about at our fundraising there. I think things like that, I think, are such key elements to basically how this experience should be represented. Mm. So basically, those are the three cornerstones that they're built on. And one of the things that we talk about in our program as well is that everybody in our program, and I know entitlement is like a four-letter word to a lot of people, but in our program, everybody's entitled to one thing, and that is the opportunity to uphold our standards. And when we talk about championship behaviors, basically, to backtrack a little bit, championship actually in the dictionary is defined as in defense of something. So we've taken that a step further, and we are in defense of our standard.
Yes.
So when we talk about championship behaviors, it's not getting the trophies that are sitting on my desk. It is championing the standard that we are trying to hold ourselves to every day. And when we have those elite level behaviors, you're going to produce an elite level product. From building a foundation, that's kind of what it is. And when I talked about staying on message, that was 100% what we did. Didn't matter when we were in the middle of, you know, watching our playoff dream dashed probably middle way through our conference season in 2016, it was like, hey, we are still a championship program. Mm-hmm. Might not be today. We might not reap the rewards today, but we're certainly going to reap them, you know, 2-3 years down the road. So I think the other part of it too is basically there are some people that I would rather lose to than win with. Mm. I think that's a piece of advice that I would give a lot of, you know, if a young head coach asks me, you know, what is something that you hold very dear, and that would be one of them. There are certain, because I think over the course of time, the longer you can employ the types of behaviors that you feel really good about, you're going to end up beating those people anyway.
That's right.
When it comes right down to it. And it's not about collecting the rings and the diplomas. That's not what it's about. I think I've heard plenty of guys on your podcast before talking about the wedding invitations and the things like that. That's what we're chasing. To me, that's what we're chasing. So, you know, I got a text this morning from a guy who played for me a few years ago who didn't actually play a ton, but actually not very much at all, but texted me talking to me about how much his experience and how much the support he got throughout his experience impacted him. And he was unanimously selected for the OCS program and, you know, goes on with the I love you and all that stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of stuff that fires me up and keeps me going type of thing.
There's this podcast that I listen to called Finding Master with Michael Gervais. Michael Gervais, a peak performance psychologist with the Seattle Seahawks, and then does his own stuff. And as you were talking, you dropped a couple dimes in there that was absolutely certified audio gold, hands down, great lines. But more than that, you could hear it. You could feel it. I can almost touch it here over the microphone. And he talks about judging your day by the amount of times that the hairs stand up on your arms. And I got the chills twice during that little segment right there. So I know we're off to a great start.
Yeah. And you had asked too about advice to a head coach. And there are, you know, I think one thing, we talked about standard quite a bit. I think being stubborn about your standard is very,
Yeah.
Is very important.
Yeah.
You know, again, we had every opportunity to peel back on some of the standards that we thought were going to work, that weren't working in a 16-win season, but we're doing the same things we did 3 years ago. It's just people are a little bit more used to the standard and things. Because we actually talked to our guys about it this year, and what you're okay with is eventually what you're going to end up with. Mm-hmm. So that is, when you're faced in those times of adversity and things like that, it's easy to say, now I want to pull away from this a little bit because 35 guys that it looks like they don't really want to do it. Well, you know, think about what it is that you want and live in the vision of what you want it to look like. And then eventually it's going to happen. That's kind of part of it. And then probably my last piece of advice is change your relationship with feedback. I know there was a big deal. Shaka Smart had something that was going viral on Twitter there a few years ago about changing your relationship with feedback. And I know that was one thing that really pivoted our program, because I think in order to serve your players, you got to have your finger on the pulse of what kind of motivates them and drives them. And the only way to do that is, you know, serve them by actually giving them some sort of opportunity or a stage for feedback. So,
You know, as you were talking through a minute ago about the standards and talking about, you know, the cornerstone of give back to the community and the way that you started that conversation, I had the words servant leadership just blinking inside my head, which I know is a big piece of who you are and what you're about. And that leads me to this, because I think one of the unique dynamics, we were talking before we got recording, you know, your interview with Jack on Top Coach, you went into a great detail on this. So I felt like this question had to be part of your interview in terms of the way that you serve as a mentor for your coaching staff. And I think there's more to that. As you really peel back the layers on it, you're expanding your staff in a way that is almost hyper creative for Division II, for small schools. And you're doing it in a way that you're providing more opportunities for guys. You're allowing them to get a greater taste of what this coaching thing is all about and help them determine, is this really something you want to dedicate your career to? So I think for our guys paying attention to the show, Andrew, just outline for us how you go about becoming a mentor, how you've expanded your staff, and how you really manage the people that are under your watch.
Sure. I think for me, and I was talking with Thomas Stallings, who's one of our assistants now, over lunch about it today, is that experience is just opportunity away when you think about it.
Yeah.
So basically, we have an opportunity. I think we're missing a population of people who want to get into this realm, but they might not have the ability or what, however you want to say it. They're not college baseball players or whatever. Like, for example, this, we have one young man who's going to be joining our program who wants to be in sports journalism. Well, how is he going to have an opportunity to do that unless he's not given an opportunity to do that? He can go to take some English major at a school and then write a bunch of papers on history and literature and all that stuff like that. But what I'm looking for is somebody, we have an opportunity for that. So we opened up a chance for him to come here. He's going to be a media relations assistant. He's going to be on our staff. He's going to have all the trappings of being on our staff, but it's an opportunity for him to build a portfolio so that when he's done his 4 years, he can go to, whether it's a graduate school, if he wants a graduate assistantship, and say, here, here's what I've been working on for the next 4 years. This is why you should hire me. No different than a young man who reached out after Jack's podcast for a student operations assistant position that we created here. He's coming in. He's got 2.5 years left on his undergraduate degree, and he's going to come be an assistant coach. And again, all the trappings of that. Right now, he's currently a JV assistant coach in California, but he really wants to be exposed to this opportunity. Whether this opportunity creates a better opportunity for him to go be a high school coach or even a college coach or whatever, we have a need within our program where we can expand what we're able to offer our program and players inside of our program. And we have a chance to open some doors from opportunity as it relates to that. And one of the things that we do with our assistants as well in the interview process is basically it's, I know it sounds like a canned, very generic interview question, but what do you want to do in 5 years, 10 years? If somebody says, hey, I want to be, you know, I want to get into scouting. Like, one of our current GAs now wants to get into scouting. Why would we not make him our recruiting coordinator? He'll get an opportunity to evaluate till his, you know, his eyes pop out of his head, whatever he needs to do. We have an opportunity. I think we can tailor some of the opportunities inside of our staff to really open up doors for some of our, for some of the people that we are able to surround ourselves with.
Well, so you and I were reflecting on that a few months ago, and I asked you just point blank, has that taken things off your plate? And said, well, there's still things that I like to hold on to, but it gives me a chance to to oversee them. And then in the meantime, in the middle of that, give them critical feedback that 5 years from now, when they have to do it on their own, they can go back to those lessons learned.
No question. That, and that's been the best part about it, is I get to work now. Here's the other part of it too. Like, I think as head coaches and as baseball coaches, sometimes we take ourselves too seriously. I think, you know, we don't have to own every decision, every process, everything like that. I think when we can put our heads together and come up with a solution that's best for the entire program, we can move our programs ahead a heck of a lot faster than we could just by ourselves. Because I've been through, I've seen it on the other side. My first year as a head coach, it was me and a graduate assistant. And he was new to college coaching. He was just out of pro ball. So there were a lot of things that we had to kind of tag team together. But then as I was able to add a student assistant here, a camp coordinator here, and then things like that, I noticed, hey, our program is moving forward much faster than it was when it was just me and a GA. So now when we've got a staff responsibility sheet that is 9, hopefully 10 people wide by the time we're all done with it, it's like we are a full-fledged organization
sure.
that is responsible for making sure we're providing the best experience to our student athletes.
Do you see yourself as a CEO?
Sometimes a little too much. I think sometimes too, it's easy for me to get caught up in the long range planning mm-hmm. and it takes me away from being able to do things, the things that selfishly I would like to do, whether it's on field or things like that. But with that said, you hire great people, inspire them to do great work. You don't really have to do that much. So, you know, I've joked with people before the last couple of years, I've caught lightning in a bottle with all the staff members that I have here. Mm-hmm. Because there are days when you might walk by my office, it just looks like I'm sitting in here drinking coffee. That's not all, you know, it's a genuine trust in the people that we have here. And I think when you take a step back and you hire, like I said, hire the good people and let them do good work, you'd be surprised at the results. We've got you guys that haven't even turned 25 yet that I feel like can go out and be, you know, can coach with the best of them, can work with the best of them, mm-hmm. and are just quality human beings. So
that's good. And I think for any coach paying attention to this, guys, if you do want to reach out to Coach Wright and maybe get more details mm-hmm. on that, I know he's all for it. I think it's an extended mentorship opportunity for him, but more than that, it really makes our coaching community better. And to his point, gets more folks involved in what we're doing here. So now that we got that framework to work with, let's dive into the deeper dive inside our Dugout Chatter shows, which really start to highlight some specific things inside your career, maybe more into your mindset. And I love this question, and I'm excited to hear you answer because I think I know where you're going with it, is how do you define success? And if you can offer that, how has that changed over the years for you?
So I think I touched on it earlier that I used to define it as rings and diplomas. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are plenty of people out there who have both, who I wouldn't either want to A, hire, B, let marry my daughter, or C, just spend any extended period of time around me. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, you're missing an opportunity there. I think it needs to be shifted a little bit more from the idea of wins and the diplomas and more to how are we equipping our young men to separate themselves in the workforce? Because this is basically what we talk to about our people now, and this is how I define success, is our program being basically a vehicle for a better life and putting them in a position to make sure that they're going to go out and get the job offers that they want, of jobs they actually want. You know, they're going to get into the grad school of their choice. They're going to, you know, she's going to say yes. And she was the one you wanted to ask,
sure.
you know, like
yep.
things like that. Like that stuff, that to me is really kind of what it's about. That's the success piece. I mean, getting the text from the young man who's got accepted in the OCS program. And then, you know, just that sort of stuff, that's success to me. Because I think if you are surrounding yourself with the right people and you're employing the right processes, all of the what most people consider success is just going to be a byproduct of that. So that's really more of what we're about. I want to make sure we're putting our guys in a position to go out and multiply impact. If I'm able to reach one of our 55 men that we have in our program, 60 if you count staff, if I'm able to reach one of them and they're able to go out and reach 5 more people, then in a lot of ways I've done my job.
That's it. You know, you outlined earlier your desire to coach, and that you knew that early on mm-hmm. based on your dad and being around the yep. game and seeing it through a different lens. I guess if you could really go deeper into that, define what that motivation was. What made you decide this is not only something that I want to do, it's something I want to dedicate my career towards? And then how have you really challenged that, and how has that morphed over the years?
So basically early, it was about, hey, I saw the amount of impact that my father had. Mm-hmm. I saw the amount of impact that my college coach had on people. And it became about, hey, that's pretty cool. They got, you know, I'm sure that feels good. Now it's about chasing that feeling a little bit. Like, and I'll use the Mudita, right?
Sure.
That's the best drug in the world. When you have an opportunity to see somebody else succeed and you're genuinely happy about it, I don't know why you'd want to feel any other
There's
way.
There's nothing better.
So Yeah, there really isn't. And it's one of those things that now that I've been in it for 14 years now, some of those are really starting to take shape. Some of those, you're starting to see that payoff now 5, 6, 7 years down the road on some of the guys who were from my first recruiting class at Concord or whatever it is. You're really starting to see some of that and really getting kind of the warm and fuzzies about, you know, what role you might have had in their lives. And basically, that's kind of, to me, that's what it's about, is putting people in a position to succeed. And I think to your next thing, how am I trying to challenge myself to kind of keep going is mm-hmm. I almost look at creating and developing our program as almost my competition. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing that I'm competing at, is how can I make our program and everything we're trying to provide more of an experience than it was yesterday. So some of the things that we have done over the course of time, we added a leadership development series when I was at Concord, where we basically bring in different guest speakers to talk about what it takes to be successful, what it takes to be a good teammate, and things like that. And that was a really neat opportunity to step away from the microphone and away from the bullhorn, or however the guys want to perceive it in the program, and let somebody else talk about it. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think sometimes we take ourselves too seriously, and that whatever comes out of our mouth is the only way for it to be done. So I think our program has developed from that, because we've had former big leaguers, scouts, you know, high level executives and pro ball lawyers, alums, whatever we can find to come back in and say, hey, we know you've been successful. What is it that did that? So that was really cool to be able to do that. And you certainly helped in a big way when you were able, one, you came in and spoke, and then obviously having Ron Polk setting that up too. Our guys would absolutely love that.
That's awesome.
But the next part of it is basically, you know, how do we grow from there? And mm-hmm. then the next part is a professional development. So we're still kind of this idea is kind of in its infancy, but to set up a framework of year one, let's work on some resume writing. Year two, let's do some networking. Year three, let's do some like interviews, mm-hmm. Interview skills and things like that. Because if we're not equipping our guys to do that, then I think a lot of the times we're missing the boat. But I don't want the first time somebody interviews to be the first time they interview. You know, I want them to be confident about walking themselves into a position and say, hey, I want this job. I'm going to speak to you very clearly, and you're going to want to pick me by the time this is all over with. So that's, you know, to answer your question, that's how I try to challenge ourselves. And I'm sure that once we get that kind of set up, then we'll move on to the next piece and the next piece and the next piece after that. So I think one of in our materials, and in my materials on my interview, I think I said that I wanted to create the most comprehensive student athlete experience in the country. Mm-hmm. Are we there yet? No, absolutely not. But can we get there? I do think we can, by making sure that we're mastering whatever it is we're doing, creating room to create something else, and then mastering that, and then snowballing it from there. So,
well, hopefully you're still there in 15 years, because Cooper's going to need a guy to go play for. And what I love about it is, you know, you just, in your entire first 30 minutes of the show, you've outlined your why as to why you coach and why you do what you do and why you spend time in the dugout. And I just want to keep digging a little bit deeper, but how are you really holding yourself accountable to that? So the deeper inner monologue that goes on, how do you hold yourself accountable to it? Then how are you still learning and growing to really expand that and develop it and really enhance, again, that student athlete experience?
So I think that it goes back to the feedback thing. Mm-hmm. I hold myself accountable because I open myself up for feedback daily. And we sit down and do formal opportunities for feedback for the guys. We do a thing we call start, stop, and continue. Where they'll come in and, you know, they tell me one thing they'd like to see us start doing or stop doing or definitely continue doing. It's almost to the point where our guys are kind of like, yeah, we've created a good enough culture of feedback here that we had a couple guys come in our last interview and be like, if I got anything, I'm going to come tell you.
Yeah.
So that part of it, you know, that part of it's good. And I think when you're trying to change a culture, it's very necessary to have those formal conversations. But I think as the culture starts to take hold, then those conversations just happen. Mm. So that's how I look at it, as almost a self-policing type of environment.
Mm-hmm.
where if I'm not doing my job, the players know that I need to hear about it. If I'm not holding up my end of the bargain as it relates to what was said on the visit, then I need to hear about it. That's kind of one of the things that, that we have tried to do is make sure that, you know, no voice is too small. It doesn't matter if it's player number 55 on our roster or, you know, our top assistant. If, yeah. if there's something that is not adding up with what their perception of our experience is supposed to look like, then it needs to be said. So
that's a super vulnerable place to be.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
I mean, you didn't arrive at that yesterday. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like early on, yeah. I'm guessing, like most young coaches, that wasn't an option. And now it's grown. Outline that for us. I think that that's a key element we don't want to just glance over.
Well, I think it comes from the fact that anytime that you are held, you use the word vulnerable, mm-hmm. which is really, that's a really good word to explain that. Anytime you do that, it's almost like you're in defense mode if somebody says something about you that you don't love.
That's right.
Well, this is something that I learned through my brother, who's actually has been a senior level executive for his basically for the last several years. And he does a lot of business coaching, very informal business coaching with me. And he said something to me that really struck a chord was that people don't do things to you, they do things for themselves. So when somebody gives you feedback, it's not because they are worried about what you're doing to them. They're worried about what is happening inside of them. So it's a form of feedback when you really think about it. So when you take any form of feedback and you consider it as basically separate the person from the problem type of thing.
Yep.
Let's fix this and then we won't have a problem anymore type of thing. So that's really where, you know, I've had to learn to be much tougher. And it's funny to see some of the younger guys come into our office. And I ask him, all right, this is your, I think this year we did a one punch question. Like, this is your one opportunity. You get to punch me in the face with some form of information.
Yeah.
And some of the young guys are like, am I going to get cut if I say the wrong thing? What's going on here? But they don't understand that it's genuinely for the benefit of the program. And
right.
I think that's what I, you know, I think it starts with taking yourself kind of out of the equation. And you then just looking at yourself as a servant to the experience and somebody who just drives it forward. Like, I don't want this program to be considered Andrew Wright's baseball program. I want this to be considered the University of Charleston baseball program. I happen to have the role that I have in it. And it's my job to make sure that I'm doing it well. And I can't do that well if I don't get feedback from everyone else.
That's awesome. Thank you for diving into that. I think there's some real gold inside that I wanted to make sure we did not move past. Now, record-breaking seasons the last 2 years. I think let's stay in that framework because as things start to turn the corner a little bit, certainly your perspective, and as you mentioned earlier, you start to think differently about your standards. You start to evolve the program. You evolve as a coach. Is there something that maybe jumps off to you that you saw out in front of you at practice in a game, conversation with a coach that you went, you know what? I could say that differently, do that differently. We could evolve ourselves. Is there something that you would point to?
I think just with the way you address each other, I think, again, it goes to, you think about how you get talked to. And I think that the big thing that has spurred our success is how we treat our people. Because obviously I think everybody thinks they do a good job of bringing the right players in and they think they're good people and all that stuff like that. So if there's a breakdown, in my opinion, a lot of times it has to do with the process, and that process would be, how do you treat your people? And we want to always make sure that we're talking to them in a way that, you know, they're not going to feel let down, put down, or shut down. It goes to the same thing. We never want to be talked to that way. So that's one of the things that has always jumped out to me and something that I've had to guard myself with, because I, you know, our players know the joke. I joke about it a lot, that I was a heck of a lot different to play for 8 years ago than I am now. Cause they hear the horror stories of me, you know, snapping fungos and, and going off and stuff like that. That's not, you know, you watch me coach, you watch our staff coach, you watch how we interact. And you think, how would that guy ever, you know, he wouldn't hurt a fly type of thing. And that's kind of one of the, that's one of the things. I think it goes to how you treat people is the biggest thing that I think has spurned some of that success.
That's good. Okay, let's pull back the curtain. Let's dive into hidden talents or hobbies. What will you offer us?
Oh, goodness. Other than clapping with one hand, I really don't have many hidden talents, but,
no instruments, no karaoke on the side, no nothing.
I took piano lessons long enough to learn how to play the Meow Mix theme, but I needed sheet music.
Okay.
So that's the extent of my ability to play an instrument. But basically, from a hobby standpoint, I do like to read. I do like to take in as many different learning resources as I can. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I'm a pretty boring guy when it comes to seeing the outside of work and usually chasing the kids around and doing things like that. Yep. Running from soccer practice or golf practice or whatever it is. So
keeping it simple. I love that. go into that, because I think when you think about hobbies, think about daily habits and routines, things that seem to find its way into how you navigate a day or what puts you in the best frame of mind. So offer that up. Then also, as you dive into those resources, books or podcasts or anything that you use to challenge yourself or think differently, what do you do on a daily basis?
Sure. I'm first one up in my household. I'm the first one in the office on our staff. I think it's one of the things that trying to put myself in a position to carve out some quiet time for myself to kind of get my day right, mm-hmm. and things like that. But, also I try to find as many opportunities as I can to put my headphones in my ears and basically listen to, whether it's a TED talk or the ABCA podcast, obviously, or Top Coach or Head of Curve and guys like that. Mm-hmm. But one of the really cool parts is that I try not to, or one of the things that I think for me is good, because I get to hit the mental reset button a little bit, is I don't spend all my time listening or ingesting baseball stuff. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to be taken away from being able to listen to how a different leader does something. Or, one of the other things I really like to do, it's not really a routine thing, but if I like to listen to hiring press conferences.
Okay.
Because I really like to see how people shape their vision. And the ones that I really like, I try to follow their progress throughout their career.
Who's one that jumps off to you?
PJ Fleck, no question.
All right, right after this interview, I'm going straight to that, and I'm going to give you one, is Cliff Godwin at East Carolina.
No question. Listen to that one, too. He's outstanding.
PJ Fleck,
one of the cool parts was I taught a coaching theory class here a couple semesters ago,
okay.
and that was actually an assignment. We called it a press conference assignment. Or press conference philosophy is what we called it. So I had each of them highlight a coach they admired, and they had to go back and listen to their press conference philosophy and see that if in a page, could they come up with what that person stood for, and if they could forecast what their success was going to look like. And it was just awesome, because it opened up even more opportunities for me to listen to some different people and things like that. So
that's good. That is a dynamite drop. I can just feel so many coaches going, yeah, I'm going to have to dive into some of that, because that is a great way to see if they held true, see if those things are still being talked about within their players. Sure. I love, what's awesome about a guy like Cliff that was on our show a couple months ago was he has not buckled from the standards that he wanted to put in place, the P-I-R-A-T-E-S and what those mean inside their program. He has not buckled once, and that team has since turned the corner and become a perennial power. And it's good to kind of see that stuff lay out in front of you. It's a great, great teaching point. Really thoughtful question here, man. And one that I think will be a staple of this show forever, because I think there's some real vulnerability to go back to that. Is your most humbling moment in coaching? What would you offer, Coach?
I think it comes from the response you get after a player's career is over and they didn't get to play as much as they probably wanted to. For example, I think it goes back to the young man who got admitted to the OCS program. Another young guy reached out, said, "Hey, coach, I just bought a house. Thanks for believing in me," and all that stuff like that was really cool. That's the, that's that side of it. I think the other thing too, and I'm going to get super, super vulnerable here. When I was the head coach of the Wilmington Sharks, we'll say it was in 07, it's my second year there, probably with a month left in the season. But I'll tell you right now, I was not prepared for the job when I got that job for those 2 years. And I've even since then, I've called the GM who hired me, and I apologized, to be quite fair. I wanted her to know that, hey, I appreciate you taking an opportunity on me. And, you know, I want you to know that I know I didn't do the job that I wanted to do, but I would not be in a position or think about the way I go about my business had I not been given that opportunity. So being told that I was not going to be, and I know summer ball, typically they're just kind of 1 year deal and go, but we had it worked out to basically for me to stay on as an assistant GM and stay on as the head coach as well. And new ownership took over, and partway through the season, they came in and said, hey, I think we're going to go in a different direction. And that was really kind of a punch in the face. Not a punch in the face, because I deserved it at that point. And for me, it was very humbling, because it really made me take a step back and say, if I want to have any future in this, I've got to be better. And I don't think I would have ever had that conversation with myself had that not come up, because I would have just continued to trudge my way through and do all of that stuff. So that was really an opportunity, kind of a splash of water in the face to really kind of look at myself and the things that I was doing. And it really kind of shaped, I know it was a very inconsequential moment because I've been able to figure it out, but it was an opportunity for me to really reflect on how do I want to do this? And at what level do I want to do this?
Timing's everything, man. You know,
no question.
That was part of the plan.
Yep.
I know we were talking about this before we got recording, and I know you've got a few you want to dive into, and I'm excited to hear them. You're talking about the funniest stories that have happened to you over the years. What are you going to offer our listeners?
I'll keep them PG, but
right. But
basically, the one that stands out, and this, you know, all the hitters now who get their own helmet when they come in the program, and they. Like when I tell them, here, this is yours for the year, I don't want to see it again, other than when it's on your head in the box. Mm-hmm. There's a reason behind that, because it was, I think, my first year as a head coach. Might have been my first year, I think. We went to Johnstown, Pennsylvania to play, and we're getting ready to hit. And you know, I'm kind of a little scatterbrained. It's my first year, and as you can tell, I'm probably a little scatterbrained anyway, but it's my first year, and I'm thinking, all right, we got players here. I got a lineup card. I got it filled out. We're good to go. I walk down from the bullpen, and I'm like, where are the helmets? So sent somebody out to the bus. I don't know if you've ever been to Johnstown. You can see through the part of the fence there where you can see guys running. You know, I saw the guys run out to the bus to try to get them. And in the meantime, I had gone over and asked a buddy of mine, Todd Williams, who's the head coach at UPJ. I said, hey, man, I'm sorry. We left the helmets on the bus. It's going to be cool. You know, they're coming back to the bus. We're all good. So he's like, hey, don't worry about it. And then I see a couple guys run back from the bus. There's no bag of helmets. I'm like, what in the world's going on here?
Yeah.
So I had to tail between the legs, walk back over and say, Todd, I'm sorry, buddy. They are in Athens, West Virginia right now. So right. We're going to have to run back and forth between every inning and grab your helmet. But that is the reason why I'm adamant about all our players getting a helmet. So I don't ever have to deal with asking another team for helmets.
Mm-hmm. That's a great. So, yeah. There's probably a few coaches that have been there, and maybe that was their exact solution was, you know what? Everybody gets their own helmet. It goes in your bag.
Yeah. I don't care if I got to pay for it myself. Sure. I don't ever want to be in that situation.
That's outstanding. Oh, that's good. Uncover this one for us. We're talking about your personal Mount Rushmore. I think it's a great opportunity to throw some shout outs to some people that at the end of the day, they're going to be exalted on your platform, the people that you'll always revere that have helped you really grow and develop inside the game of baseball. Who are those folks?
Sure. I think I would have to start with my family. I know they probably don't have that much room, but grew up in an outstanding household. Father was a coach right up till he passed away in 2004. My mother was not, so I get the baseball kind of love and the passion for baseball and all of that from him. My mother was an elementary school teacher for 30 years, so I get whatever patience I have is directly from her. And then I had best big brother and big sister in the world, so you know how supportive and everything they were. I don't think I'd be in the situations that I'm in now if it had not been for them. And then obviously, I don't think I can talk about a Mount Rushmore without talking about my college head coach, Kevin Garrett, who's again the head coach at Concord, just gave me an opportunity and really took me kind of under his wing when he certainly didn't have to, gave me my first opportunity and gave me a ton of autonomy to go out and make a bunch of mistakes, which I did, but was just had, you know, really instilled kind of a very competitive element to how I go about my day. So he's certainly one of them as well. Have a ton more. I'll text them all later and say, sorry, I left you out. But
that's good. Unpack this as we look at the qualities of the very best players, the best teammates, the best people that you've spent time with around baseball. Cause I think there's, you know, some, you know, direction to be gained from these answers. As I know our listeners talk about is, you know, success leaves clues. So it's really not that tough of a solution when you really look at what great people are doing, and we can all reflect on the players that we've had, or the people we spent time with and gone, man, what separated them from the pack? And so Coach Wright, what would you offer on that one?
I think one thing is probably the most impactful thing when I walk away from an interaction is how somebody makes me feel. So I've had the opportunity to be around some high level baseball people that knee jerk reaction to, hey, I'm about to walk over and talk to this hitting coach or whatever it is. Some guy who's been on TV for 20 years and you walk over and you walk away from the conversation. You're like, that guy made me feel like $1 million.
Yeah, sure.
I think that is one of the things that really kind of straightened me up a little bit, because it was a quality that my father had actually that was one of those things that I've had to really develop personally, but the ability to make you feel important. I think it's absolutely crucial when you're dealing with, you know, as fragile a game or as fragile as our players can be sometimes because of the nature of the game that we play. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to make them understand how valuable they are. You know, just framing what you have to say in a particular way to make them feel good about themselves or make them feel like that interaction actually mattered to you. I think that's one of the things that I've always taken away. And I think you are, Jeremy Schiedinger, are one of the absolute best at it. You know, and it's a quality that I wish for when I'm looking for coaches. It's a quality I look for when I'm looking for players or just people I want to surround myself with, is what is that thing about them that makes everybody feel important in the course of the conversation. So that to me is one of the big things. But I think, you know, when you do that, when that's something that's important to you, everything else comes with it. The selflessness, the work ethic, all of that stuff. I think it's a very requisite quality to be a great teammate, is to make people feel important.
All right, man. That was chill moment number three. I appreciate that. thanks for the nod. Okay, brother, this is the last thing I got for you. And I think you're going to crush this part of it, because I'm interested. This is a little more deeper dive. The best advice you've been given. So something that you can reflect on that moment and it still guides you even today. And then obviously, man, empty out your pockets. What else do you have for guys listening? What other advice would you have for coaches to send them down a better path?
One of the most surface level pieces of advice that I draw on quite a bit is most important part of player development is player selection. And you can take player out of it and you can insert relationship. You can insert anything that you want. The most important part of any situation is going to be what you select. So I think that we talk about it a ton in recruiting when we have our recruiting meetings, is that, hey, if we want this guy to develop, then we need to recruit a good physical player. Mm-hmm. The joke that actually one of my former players, Joey Miller, and I used to joke about all the time was, hey man, you want a team that can hit, you better recruit some hitters.
That's right.
It's no different than if you want a coaching staff of good people who are going to impact the lives of the players that you have, then you need to hire good people. Mm-hmm. It's not something at this point, if I'm hiring a 25-year-old who's still a little rough around the edges, it's going to be difficult for him to impact the 50 people that we have in our program. Mm-hmm. So that's a big piece of it for me. I think that's, you know, as far as how we go about our business, it's pretty simple. I know it seems like a lot of, you know, if you follow us on social media, it seems like there's a lot going on, but I can promise you that it is a program that's built on a very simple foundation of specific things, and we just try to execute those things on a daily basis. So I'm not sure that I can say it any more clearly than we just want to provide the best experience possible for our guys. And then everything else can kind of fall into place from there.
That's it. Man, an hour well spent. And I think for anybody paying attention to it, to gain some of your insights, I'm sitting here just trying to jot down quick notes. And I've got 18 notes that laid out and are probably 18 quote images that we could use on social, because I think there's so much to be gained from this conversation. Coach Wright absolutely blew it out of the park. And again, we're just thankful that there's guys like you inside the ABCA. I'm thankful to call you a friend, and I'm a proud alum of the University of Charleston. I'm excited to see what you're building there. Thanks for jumping on the call with us, my friend. We wish you the best of luck on the recruiting trails, and we look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and checking out another one of our Dugout Chatter episodes. Now, here at the American Baseball Coaches Association, we are here to serve coaches around the world. So let us know how we can help. Head over to our website, abca.org, for more information. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, at ABCA1945. You can also find us on Facebook as well. And feel free to reach out to me directly on Twitter at CoachSheets3 or by email at Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. We'd love to hear from our loyal members and continue to find ways to keep growing this game together. As always, coaches, thank you for listening in and staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Until next week, coaches, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.